psychiatric emergency team. She then found him at the Los Angeles downtown metro jail and bailed him out. He's been in the hospital since then with the help of the Los Angeles Department of Mental Health and her staunch organizing efforts. Patrice is currently in the process of getting conservatorship of her brother. And that does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Libby Rainey, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Hani Massoud, Trina Nadura, Tamari Astudio, Adriana Contreras, and Maria Terracena. Special thanks to Renee Feltz. I'm Amy Goodman.
Hi, you're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is the World Trade Organization's protests 20 years later, a lecture from Nobel laureate Joseph Stiglitz.
Join KBOO by December 31st and receive free gifts and prizes from the Give Guide. Just click the donate banner on the KBOO app to keep community radio strong and vibrant in Portland and beyond.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the SJAC Holiday Fundraiser and Open Hours Launch Party on Sunday, December 29th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Social Justice Action Center in Portland. The Social Justice Action Center provides community space, access to a commercial kitchen, and now new open hours. The launch party will provide information about new programs, opportunities to volunteer, and more. Again, that's the SJAC Holiday Fundraiser and Open Hours Launch Party on Sunday, December 29th at the Social Justice Action Center, 400 Southeast 12th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hi, this is Jinka, KBOO's web and new media coordinator. I want to ask for your help to support KBOO in our year-end giving campaign and to help spread the word. If you have a social media account, find KBOO Radio on your social media of choice and share our posts. Promote KBOO on your own social media. Tell your friends why you support and encourage them to do the same. You can find more information on the KBOO website, including already written posts and pictures that you can use to share on your social media. Go to kboo.fm/promote KBOO. Thank you.
This New Year's Eve, TriMet has you covered with free rides starting 8 p.m. and late night max service until 3 a.m. No surge pricing here, just a free ride to ring in the new year and a safe way to get back home. Learn more at TriMet.org/New Year's.
December marks the 20-year anniversary of the 1999 World Trade Organization protests in Seattle. This year, the Washington Fair Trade Coalition held a forum to mark the anniversary of the shutdown of the WTO conference. We will hear the keynote address from Nobel laureate Joseph Stiglitz in just a moment. But first, comments from Lori Wallach, director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch.
Good evening, everybody. It is really funky to be here. 20 years, and actually it was the day before the protest, so in 4 days from when, at this venue, the International Forum on Globalization had its big teach-in. And some of the people who taught me the most in the world about globalization and trade, some of my heroes and our elders in the movement, were here with a lot of amazing activists and young people doing maybe the last little frosting on a cake that had been baked over the course of a year of educating, strategizing, training, planning, plotting, agitating, creating art and ideas. And that day and the next day on the streets of Seattle, history was made. Not only did the whole world get awoken to the fact that here in the belly of the beast, in the United States, where our corporations and our government were pushing the corporate rigged model of globalization, here 50,000 people from across the damn country went outside in the freezing rain to say, oh no, we're not okay, with corporate globalization either. You folks in developing countries, folks in Europe who've been protesting the WTO, we're with that party too. We want different rules for the global economy. And not only was that a coming out party of sorts for the US, but also it was an amazing success. The WTO expansion, supported by the world's biggest corporations that was slated to take what already was an octopus of WTO and expand its tentacles into more parts of our daily lives, constraining what our governments can do, what we can organize and aspire to for the kind of planet and communities and economy we want, but also creating new rights and powers for corporations as if they didn't already have enough. So here, people on the streets basically gave that last enzymatic push to what had been going on in the suites in Geneva with developing country negotiators saying, basta. We don't want it expanded. We want it fixed. Already at that point, the WTO was almost 5 years old. It was causing serious problems. And in many developing countries, there had been mass protests against establishment of the WTO in the first instance, against its first 5 years. And so those negotiators from the Caribbean, from Latin America, from Africa, a lot of who had been locked out of the actual decision-making rooms at the convention center, were watching the protests on TV. And that last little tweak where the streets and the suites came together, they went in and they said, we're not going for this. And they shut down WTO expansion. We shut down WTO expansion. The inside, the outside, people power won. Now, that was in a context. And I want to frame it a little bit because Professor Stiglitz is going to talk a little bit about some of the problems that have been caused, some of the data, but also what needs to be done going forward. Because those WTO protests were situated in a methodology of people power organizing that had broad cross-sectoral coalitions based in the country where you have political power, someone in your own country. The WTO is like a big marshmallow. You punch it, but you don't hit anything. It's insulated. Where we have power is the government officials from our country taking decisions to go to that kind of institution, which is designed to not be accessible to accountability. So, country-based coalitions, depending on the politics in your country, of progressive sectors, labor, environment, consumer, environmental, family, farm, faith, student groups here, united internationally with their counterparts from numerous other countries. Country-based campaigns, internationally coordinated. That had already stopped the Multilateral Investment Agreement on Investment, the MAI, and by 2005, it had stopped the Free Trade Area of the Americas, a 34-country expansion of NAFTA. Seattle was the sandwich. Seattle was the meat. MAI, was that a fluke? Everyone wondered, boy, was that, how did that happen? Then Seattle happened, and people went, oh God, it's not a fluke. And then the FTAA, with our brothers and sisters in Latin America doing amazing work. With the WTO, it took 15 more years and mass protests at ministerials in Cancun and Hong Kong and Geneva and tons of incredibly hard work in numerous developing countries and also very brave negotiators in Geneva to ultimately do away altogether with WTO expansion, which is a huge honking success. We should definitely celebrate. But as we celebrate that remarkable success of people power over corporate power, that moment where the so-called unstoppable force of corporate globalization hit the truly immovable object called popular democracy, when that happened, what was left are still the existing WTO rules, the rules that have led so many people to protest in the first instance. And there are tons of free trade agreements that have everything in WTO plus the lunatic investor state dispute settlement system. And there are thousands of bilateral investment treaties with those crappy rules. And so that version of corporate rigged globalization, it's still in place. So when we were in the streets, we said, no new round, turn around. And my friends, the turnaround part still needs to be done. So I knew a lot about WTO when I started working on the events that would become the Seattle protests. But I got schooled in direct action and the power of people standing up bravely, directly, and stopping power that is against our interest. And the work we need to do together going forward is a combination of that direct interference with corporate power and inside work to make sure that we elect representatives, a president, who is going to represent the vision of people and planet first rules for the global economy that we want to replace, to do the turnaround. And we also can see places where there is some progress. So as we're thinking about the struggle we have going forward, and Professor Stiglitz is going to talk a little bit about some of the ideas of the kinds of things, the challenges. I mean, the rules of globalization obviously have to put the climate challenge first, or we're not going to survive. We have systematically rules in place that undermine the values and goals that will determine our happiness and that of our families, our well-being, the sustainability of our economies and our planet. But there is progress. There is what we stopped that was bad, and there is the slow demise of investor state. And I want to just say one thing about the current fight, which is the WTO ain't getting the message on its own. So what's on the agenda for next year's ministerial? China wants to push new investment rules like ISDS into the WTO, as if we haven't stopped that over and over. And the big e-commerce platforms, the Googles, the Amazons, they want to handcuff governments from being able to regulate them and set those rules globally in the WTO. So we've got work to do for stopping more of the worst, but on the turnaround, I just say contemplate this. North American Free Trade Agreement, model of many bad trade agreements. Right now, big fight about whether it's actually going to become the renegotiated deal something worth supporting, but investor state dispute resolution is largely gone because everyone's work made it not viable for a U.S. trade agreement to have that again. Because you all helped make sure there was no majority for TPP, and the anchor that sank it was ISDS. So this time around, when they renegotiated the NAFTA, they said, oh God, we gotta get that out of there. And it is almost all gone, which is ginormous, because the rest of the world can look at that and go, oh my God, if even in the U.S., it's kind of like the same kind of coming out of Seattle, only with ISDS. So we should think about what we've achieved, and then think about the hard work we have. And now, we're gonna have Professor Stiglitz talk about some more of the outcomes, but also, with his new book, he's got a great vision of some of the things we need to fight for. So it's a great honor to be here, and I actually think someone else is introducing Professor Stiglitz, so I will just say thank you, Seattle, for the amazing historic event of 20 years ago and all the amazing work that's been done to fight for our people and planet first economy. Thanks.
Thank you, Lori. That was a great message. I'm Stan Sorscher, president of the Washington Fair Trade Coalition. We're so pleased to see everyone here this evening to mark the 20th anniversary of the WTO protests in 1999. A diplomat from Europe was in Seattle a while ago to promote a large fair trade, a large free trade agreement. He said that it and other free trade agreements would determine how life would be organized in 2050. Most people think that's the job of governments and in a democracy to determine how life is organized. Joseph, maybe not, right? Joseph Stiglitz is exceptional among leading economists for his recognition that economics and politics cannot be separated, especially not in America's money-driven politics. We can't shy away from the need for collective action to address the problems of our complex 21st century world. We must rely less on free markets and more on public policies that serve public interests. This is true domestically and even more so in the global economy, where the policies built into NAFTA and the WTO have tried to create a form of global governance without global government. Please join me in welcoming Professor Joseph Stiglitz.
Well, it's a real pleasure to be back in Seattle and to discuss once again globalization. And Lori and Stan have given a good introduction to many of the issues I want to talk about this evening. There are four things I want to go through this evening. First, I want to talk about why the events 20 years ago here in Seattle were so important. And then I want to talk about some of the economic theories that lay behind the trade negotiations, the trade regime that we've had, why they're wrong, and what are some of the new insights to think about going forward. And third, I then want to talk about the evolution of trade policy in the two decades since the battle for Seattle. A few victories, but many setbacks. And I'll try to describe, in particular, the challenge posed by the Trump trade agenda, and make a few remarks about how we should think about a progressive trade agenda, how we ought to think about reforming globalization. And finally, trade is only part of a broader reform in the way our economy works, in some sense the way our politics work. That was highlighted by the remarks that Lori just made. A lot of the issues are related to the fact that the trade agenda has really tried to subsume issues that ought to be part of our own domestic political agenda. But that means we ought to be thinking about what is the agenda that we ought to be pursuing. And the anger that was shown to at the trade agenda 20 years ago really reflects a dissatisfaction with much of the economic agenda in the United States, particularly and around the world. So I want to really spend some time talking about what should a progressive economic agenda look like, and how we might achieve some better outcomes. So first, let me begin with why this 20th anniversary celebration of the events 20 years ago is so important. They deserve to be remembered for several reasons. First, it was the first major global protest against globalization. In a way, the anti-globalization movement became a global movement and had an impact around the world. It questioned the hypotheses underlying globalization, in particular the a belief that globalization would make everybody in every country better off. It was clear by then that that wasn't true, that many people, many countries were worse off. And as I'll remark a little bit later, I saw that particularly from the perspective of, I was at that moment the chief economist of the World Bank. And I saw how the rules of the international trading regime were hurting a lot of countries, that trade liberalization was much more effective at destroying jobs than it was in creating jobs. And so while it was promised that it would lead to more growth, in fact, in places like Africa, it's led to deindustrialization and 25 years of economic stagnation. The hypothesis that everybody would be better off was itself a corollary of another hypothesis, which is known as trickle-down economics. The idea was that if that trade would make the economic pie bigger, and in doing so, everybody would benefit. I should emphasize that there is no economic theory behind that idea. And, remarkably, no evidence. In the subsequent 20 years since the Seattle protest, the evidence has mounted very strongly. In the United States, GDP has continued to go up. It's not a good measure of well-being, but GDP has gone up. But the fact is that real wages at the bottom in the United States are at the same level that they were 60 years ago. So if you're one of the people with a limited education having a low-wage job, you haven't seen any benefit from all of the growth that has occurred over more than a half century. So it's clear that trickle-down economics hasn't worked. Even in the middle, things haven't gone very well. The median income of a full-time male worker, and the full-time workers are the lucky ones, the median income of a full-time male worker today is the same as it was 42 years ago. So it's very clear that trickle-down economics has not worked. But there was a deeper critique. The way globalization was managed meant that some countries were worse off. It was not every country that was better off. As I said, that was something that was I saw repeatedly from my perch at the World Bank. It was also a critique of neoliberalism, market fundamentalism, an idea that I'm going to come back to. Another remarkable and important part of the Seattle protest is that it brought together environmentalists, labor activists, health advocates, those concerned with developing countries. It was thus an early example of what has since become more common, a coalition of movements, a coalition of the kind that will be absolutely essential if the progressive agenda is to be achieved. And in coming together, these groups recognized that all of them shared a vision of society, obviously with different emphases, a vision that was markedly different from that of the right. This coalition showed that economic arrangements, trade agreements, are about more than just trade. They touch on every aspect of our life. They reflect our values, and the resolution of these matters cannot be left to trade ministers and the special interests they represent. There was a deep democratic deficit in the way the trade agreements were arrived at, a deficit that was further exposed by the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, TPP. Let me make a few comments about this democratic deficit, because I think it is actually at the core of much of the objection to trade agreements. The first aspect, the trade agreements are a reflection of power. The fact is that the corporate interest have their views expressed in these trade agreements. And the study of how corporate power has gotten their way is an important issue for understanding the exercise of power in the United States. It has obviously to do with the power of money in our politics. What I said in one of my earlier books, that the United States has moved from a system of one person, one vote, that was better described by a system of $1, one vote. And The second aspect of this democratic deficit is the lack of transparency. The trade agreements are negotiated in secret. Not even members of Congress were able to find out what the negotiating position of the United States was. And the negotiating position of the U.S. trade representative was actually different and opposed to the position that the President of the United States had taken on a number of issues. So, and one never knew, were these negotiating positions or positions that were really hard and fast, what was going on. And obviously, the lack of transparency should be something that we should be very disturbed about. The third is that over time, tariffs have come down. And the major trade issues are no longer the issues of tariffs. The average tariff between the United States and Europe now is under 3% on both, is around 3% on both sides. So tariffs are not really very important. You know, if you eliminated these 3% tariffs, it wouldn't make any difference. The fluctuations in exchange rate that happen every week are greater than these 3%. So the tariff barriers are not really the important thing. It's the non-tariff barriers. What do they mean by non-tariff barriers? They're the regulations. And the regulations are the rules by which our society lives. And the question is, who should set those rules? Should they be set by trade negotiators in non-transparent trade negotiations in which corporate interests exercise their power, or should they be set in a more democratic way through our Congress? Obviously, I think the right answer is that they should be set by a more democratic process. And I'll come back to give one example a little bit later, but a very important issue right now is, what are the rules governing the digital economy? And we are just waking up to the dangers of a world without adequate digital rules. And it's not just about monopoly, it's about privacy, it's about political manipulation, issue liability, pornography. It's a whole set of issues that have opened up that the digital companies understand what is in their interest, and we're beginning to understand what is in their interest may not be in our interest. And what the digital companies are trying to do is to make sure that our democratic processes will not work by embedding the agreements about what the digital constraints on what digital regulations will be in our trade agreements. And they've already succeeded in one of the trade agreements that's been passed, and they're trying to get it in some of the others. So that is the third important aspect of the democratic deficit. And the fourth is that we delegated to the president enormous amount of power in trade. We don't delegate to the president the power to set budgets. So that has to go through Congress, and it's in the Constitution. The idea was that in battlefields, you need to delegate to the president. But somehow, we slipped from battlefield in military to the use of language, trade war, and to say that in a trade conflict, the president has to have this enormous authority. That delegation was done under the assumption that there was a responsible president, and that it would be used only occasionally in the context of an unusual situation. not to be used, nobody expected would be used as a tool, as an instrument for issues of immigration, issues of you don't like what a country is doing in one area or another area, and you use trade policy to badger them as an instrument giving complete discretion to the president. What is even more disturbing is the opportunity for corruption that it opens up, because the way we administer these powers is the president says, okay, we're going to have a 10% or 15 or 20 or 25% tariff against imports from a given country, but if you apply, we can give you an exemption. But the exemptions are given not on the basis of any simple set of rules, it's total discretion. In the previous round called the Uruguay round that was concluded in 1994, most of you probably don't remember that round, but there were two things that the developing countries asked for, the two things that the developed countries asked for. The round was trying to bring the developing countries within the global trading regime, and the developed countries got the two things they wanted, including intellectual property rights, which I'll come to later, but the developing countries didn't get what they wanted. And they were told, be patient, you'll get it maybe eventually. By the end of the 1990s, it was